Hey guys, it is nearing Memorial Day in the US. And so I thought, what better time to share this life story of a really cool military priest that I found on the internet, as one does. I've had really the privilege of being able to get to know quite a few military chaplains since being over here in Europe. I've honestly never really had too much experience. We normally don't really live on base. We've always tried to get to know our parish priests, but I've never really connected with a military priest until I went to Fatima and I got to spend almost a week just throwing out with these guys. And it was there that I learned that military chaplains, like Catholic priests, are on loan from another diocese. So if there's a priest shortage everywhere, there's really a priest shortage in the military. And what the military might need 400 priests to be able to serve the army adequately for the Catholics in the army, they only have like 90. And that piqued my interest. And then this priest starts popping up on my Instagram, Father Uncle Sam. And I just thought it was fascinating. And I started following him and I thought, you know what? I want to talk to this guy. So I reached out and he's amazing. That his story is just awesome and real. And it's a really good just thing to have in the back of your mind when you're a parent who's fostering these vocations. You know, there's a very, very large need in the military for spiritual guidance. A lot of these people are doing very hard jobs, following hard orders, sacrificing a lot, and they need spiritual help, and we don't have the priests to do it. So yeah, we got into this. It's a really good chat. If you join the Patreon, you actually get the extended version because I kind of wrapped it up and then we kept chatting. So you can join the Patreon. All the links are in the show notes. It's $4.99. And $4.99. So you can do that. If you don't have the spare change to do that, then please just give the podcast a glowing rating and review. It helps other people find it. And so other people can know that like life is messy. We're called to be holy anyways, right? So yeah, enjoy my talk with Father Pete.
Welcome to the Holy Hot Mess Podcast. I'm your host, Heather, and this is the podcast where we strive for holiness even when everything in the world and our personal lives can feel like it's a massive hot mess. From deep theological chats to simple practical advice, we talk about it all here, all in hopes that we can encourage each other to keep our eyes, hearts, and minds set on heaven.
And then how's the shot look?
You look great. Okay. She looks great. Right. There you go.
I know she's not cut off. Good. Okay.
No, she's good. She's good. Yeah. So, I just want to know a little bit about you and like your vocation story, and then just want to get into, you know, how we can support what you're doing. I'd love to get into like the co-sponsorship thing. Like that's something I just learned about. Okay. Yeah. Just tell me a little bit about yourself, who you are, a little bit of your vocation story, and then like how you got to be doing what you're doing now, being an Instagram.
Okay. Okay. So let's see. So Father Pete Pompisolo, I'm from the Archdiocese of New York.
Okay. And like New York City?
New York City. Yeah. Oh, the Archdiocese of New York is Staten Island, Manhattan, the Bronx, and the lower seven counties of the state. Okay. So New York City gets divided between three different dioceses, really. Those, the three boroughs and Archdiocese of New York, Brooklyn is its own diocese, and then Queens and Long Island is another diocese.
Okay.
But I had been in the army first, and this is often a question I get is like, you have to be in the army before you become a chaplain.
Yeah. Okay.
I happened to have been, I was an ROTC student. I was a scholarship student. I thought I was going in on active duty out of college.
Yeah.
But I'm also an old man. I started this back in 1987.
Oh my goodness.
So yeah. So I was a cadet in 1987.
Where were you? Where did you go to school?
Brooklyn Polytech.
Okay.
And they had an ROTC program, and I thought I was going to go on active duty and that would be it. But the first Gulf War ended and they really wanted to cut back on military budget. So had no opportunity to go on active duty. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'll get a job. And I did a couple of things. I was working for a publisher for a textbook company.
Okay.
And then I became a school teacher and I taught for 5 years. And that's where the vocation story really kind of starts to come in heavy.
Yeah.
I had slipped away from the church mm-hmm. for a good part of my late teens, my early 20s. I was going to church maybe on Christmas and Easter kind of thing.
Yeah.
I was barely saying my prayers. And then I had the summers off as a school teacher
mm-hmm.
and I was in Europe and I felt awful because I felt like such a tourist in all these beautiful Catholic churches
yeah.
that I was going to see, like, you know, oh wow, there's pretty stained glass and these beautiful statues. And do I even belong here anymore? Like, do I even, like, am I a part of this?
Yeah.
And it really hurt. It hurt and it hit me hard. And I said, what am I doing? Like, I need to, let me start taking my faith seriously. And I, just by God's grace, I just made a good confession. I said, all right, I'm going to go to Mass every Sunday. And well, that was the end of it, really, basically.
Yeah.
Because I started going to Mass every Sunday. And then that snowballed into the next summer. I found my way into going to Mass every day. And very devout. Yeah. But my parents are very devout. My sister was very devout. They went to daily Mass and I kind of couldn't, it came as a question, like, why not go to Mass every day? I'm like, because little old ladies go to Mass every day. I'm not going to Mass every day. I'm like, well, why not? And I was like, well, all right, I'll do it for the summer. Mm-hmm. And then we'll see where this leads. So I start doing it for the summer. I meet this young nurse, we fall in love, things are going great, we're thinking about getting married, wow, this is awesome. And in the meantime, I'm like, well, I guess I'll just keep going to Mass. And we would actually go to daily Mass on Friday nights. Like, that would be our thing. Like, Friday night, we'd see each other, let's go to Mass Friday evening and then have dinner. And
yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is all unfolding. I'm gonna, like, yeah, I'll get married, I'll have kids, this is gonna be great. And then I got smacked over the head. It was a daily Mass. I remember Our Lady Queen of Peace in Staten Island. I'm in the basement church and the priest elevates the host. And I'm like, oh no, no, I'm not doing that. That's like, it just kind of came to me as a question, like, why don't you become a priest? And I'm like, oh, I am thinking way too hard.
Yeah.
But it really, there's no other way of explaining how clearly I just in that moment, like, why don't you become a priest? I'm like, because I can't become a priest. Not me. I mean, like, that's just somebody else. Like, I can't do that. Why don't you become a priest? Oh, it was so heavy. It was awful. I sat on it for a little bit until I had the courage to actually even talk about it to anybody. I wound up talking to a priest, the priest at the church, and I finally get the courage to mention it to my girlfriend. And then she kind of, you know, we both got upset. Like, I'm like, listen, I don't know what's going on. I'm not leaving today. And then she calms down and she says, well, I could see you doing that. I'm like, I don't want to hear that from you.
I didn't want to hear that from you.
So I'm like, what? And I sat on it for another 6 months, prayed on it. And it was really her generosity. She was very generous to kind of, she gave me the space to really figure this out. Cause I told her, I was convinced. And I told her, I said, listen, one of two things are happening. I'm going to become a priest or we're getting married. And I'm not like making up this excuse cause I want to run the other direction or anything like that. And she believed me. And I'm so glad she did. She really gave me the space to kind of, she told me, she's like, well, until you figure it out, like when you figure it out, you got to tell me right away. And I did about 6 months later. I figured it out. I got hit over the head again. And I knew it was a very strange thing. It was like, you can't, kind of like when like there's like first day of school comes, think of that kind of thing. Like it's first day of school. There's no getting around it. It's the first day of school. Summer's over. You can't ignore it. You're getting on the bus. You're going to school. That day, that Pentecost Sunday, something flipped inside of me. And I just knew I had gone to Mass and I said, oh no, I have to tell her. Like, that's it. School bus is leaving. I got to get on that thing. And I'm like, oh no. And I did. You know what's so mysterious, Heather? I didn't even have to say anything when I went to see her that day.
She knew.
I kind of like looked at her and she looked at me. She was a twin. She was an identical twin.
Oh, I have identical twins.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's adorable.
Yeah, they're six. I didn't realize that. They're just wild. Yeah.
Well, her identical twin sister was getting married that Saturday. This is a Sunday. Her twin sister was getting married that Saturday. But I knew it. She's like, you're not doing this today. Like, she just starts, you know, yelling. I'm like,
yeah.
Like, I can't go to this wedding with you. I said, trust me. I can't go to this wedding with you. You're thinking about being the bride. I'm thinking about being the priest. I just, like, I can't do this. I'm not doing this. And I told her, I said, listen, just trust me. And it's going to be all right. And then fast forward a few months later, she made me promise that I'd tell her that I got accepted to seminary. And I called her. It was the Feast of the Assumption in August. I found out. I called her. And she said, hey, don't take this the wrong way, but I'm so glad you didn't go to that wedding. I had a great time. I'm glad you weren't there.
Oh, my goodness. That's funny. Aw.
And then about 3 years later, I heard, you know, she got engaged. She's married with kids. And I usually finish the story by saying God loved Dawn so much. He loved her so much. He saved her from me. He said, I got this one. I'll take care of you.
I'll take him.
Don't worry about it. I got something better for you. Door number two is so much better than this.
Yeah. And I bet she can look at her life too. You know, we tend to, it's kind of my favorite way to look at faith as retrospectively. Like, we can look at all these horrible things we've experienced in our lives, or just road bumps or ways where we thought our life was going to go this way, but it went this way. And then when you're years out, you can look at it and be like, thank God for X, Y, Z, because I wouldn't be where I am right now had that not happened to me. You know, like, his providence in that kind of.
It's true. I think his providence shines through in spite of our faults.
Yes.
Because like, I'm not of the camp that's like, you know, I don't have any regrets. Oh, I got lots of regrets. Like,
but God used those stupid moments I had.
He draws, like, it's that expression, he draws straight with crooked lines. And mm-hmm. It's amazing. And that's his grace. And that's his love and his mercy for us, which is why we have to be loving and merciful.
Yeah. So when was your, like, so you go through seminary, you become a priest. When did you think army would probably be good too?
First thought. Oh yeah. Because remember, in the context of that whole story I just gave you, I was already reserves about 7 years.
So you were in the reserves.
I had been in the reserves about 7 years at that, or 6 years at that point. I owed them two.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the, you know, the seminary. I was into old BDUs, and it was the early 90s. It was like, oh, it was mid 90s by then. So it was like 1996 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I told them, I said, I'm thinking about being a priest. I still owe the army time. And they're like, that's fine. You know, you can do that while you're going to seminary.
Yeah.
And it was just 1 weekend a month.
Mm-hmm.
But my first thought always was, I want to be a priest, and I would love to do this for the army. I know the army needs priests. So, like, mm-hmm. why not be a priest and a soldier? And that was first and foremost on my mind.
That's so cool.
But then I get three of my classmates jazzed up to go to chaplain candidate school as seminarians.
Mm-hmm.
We do all this paperwork. We're getting ready, and we're going to spend a summer between first theology and second theology. Our philosophy studies. To go and do chaplain candidate formation as officers.
So is that like boot camp for chaplains?
It's a series of educational modules for everybody, any minister, male, female, that's coming into the army to be a chaplain. It's a requirement. It's basically like Bullock.
Okay. Okay.
You know,
yeah.
It's the basic officer. Because I know your husband's Air Force, right?
Yeah. He's Air Force.
Yeah. So it would be like the basic course.
Like OTS or something like that. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I was just about a captain at that point. I had been in the army for, seven or 8 years, almost 8 years by then. And then I had this moment where the priest who was part of our formation, God rest him, Father Ed Warnken, he had been in remission from cancer, and his cancer came back. And as soon as he announced to the house that his cancer came back and he asked for our prayers. I just thought to myself, I'm like, oh, I ain't going to this training. I'll stick around here for the summer and I can help him with appointments and do whatever. And because I didn't need the training. It's like, that'll be there. The Army's going to be there. So I got all those guys jazzed to go. And then I said, no, I'm not going. And they're like, what do you mean? You guys are all excited. One of them is actually, he's in the Army longer than I am as a chaplain. Because he stayed with it.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
All the way through.
Yeah.
But I hit the pause button and it was the best thing. It really was. It was a good thing to hit the pause button. I stuck around that summer, but not only to help him and to be a part of that, but I needed the break from the Army. I think it was, you know, looking back on it, I needed less Army and more priest formation and to kind of just put my focus on that. But still always hoping to become a priest, you know, and a chaplain. I get ordained in 04. I'm a pastor in, well, okay, I get ordained in 04 and I'm 3 years a priest. And that's when I get a phone call during the surge in 07 that I had a friend who was a battalion executive officer, a reserve unit. They were getting activated. They're like, hey, we know you used to be in. Do you want to come back in? We need a chaplain. We're getting activated. We're going. I was like, that sounds great. I would love to do that. Mm-hmm. And I liked the fact that I wasn't asking for it. It was really coming, you know, outside to of me you. To ask for this need. So I go to ask for permission. And then long story short, it's like, no, you're not doing that. We got other plans for you. And I was made a pastor.
Okay.
So I'm like, well, I guess that's not happening.
So you're saying the diocese you were in America made you a pastor, wouldn't release you to military service.
Correct. My cardinal Archbishop Edward Egan, who ordained me, and God love the man, he ordained me and he gave me these ministerial opportunities, but he wanted me for himself. So this, for your audience to realize that no priest who's a chaplain in the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, none of them act on their own. They're there on loan from their home ordaining bishop to do this kind of work.
Yeah, that's so, something I didn't understand. I just went to Fatima with the Military Conference of Catholic Women back in November. And we had just moved here and I had got this opportunity and I was like, I'm just going to go. I don't know anybody. I don't know Spanish. I don't, you know, like we're just going to go. So I went to Fatima and I was actually going to ask you if you know Father Paul Halliday.
Yes. Okay. I mean, I not well, but yeah.
Okay. I think he might he might have been one of your predecessors in some way, shape, or form, but I think he petitioned the Diocese of Baltimore for 5 years to let him go. And I don't know, that's such a wild dynamic because there's a massive priest shortage everywhere in America.
It took me 15 years.
15 years.
Well, you figure even more than that, because by the time I first started this process, it took 7 years to get ordained.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was ordained another 10. So really 17 years before I was given a yes to go.
Wow.
Because Cardinal Egan wanted me home. Okay.
Yeah. They need you.
And we get ordained out of obedience. It's like, right. I can't make this up on my own. I can't, it's like, I submit to the decision of my ordaining bishop and his successors. So I put it out there, but it's like, no, I need you here. Okay. So I just let it go. Always knowing that I said, you know what? I'll do this term as a pastor, but I'm going to ask again.
Yeah.
And by the time I ask again, I was 44 years old. So I'm getting older. And I just knew, I was like, well, yeah, I'm not getting any younger. This is going to be like my last chance to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then talk about Providence. God rest Cardinal Egan. He retired and I got a new bishop. And God bless Cardinal Dolan, who's my current bishop and who's the archbishop who gave me permission. He said yes to me. And that was after 10 years of ordination. He said, yes, go ahead. They need guys. Go ahead. And I told him what I wanted to do. I said, listen, I think this is great. I'll be with the troops. I'm looking to become a paratrooper and jump out with them and be a chaplain with them. And he's like, yeah, you should do that. Go ahead, go. And
that's crazy.
And it really happened. He gave me permission and I've been in 10 years. Mm-hmm. I had two airborne assignments. I was jumping out of airplanes up in Alaska. Mm-hmm. I was part of J-Bear. So Elmendorf, I know the Air Force side pretty well.
Yeah, okay.
I shared a lot of time with Father Jesus Navarrete.
Okay.
He was an Air Force, he's an Air Force priest chaplain. We had time together up in Alaska. And then I got picked up for a job in Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And I was jumping in Kentucky and did a lot of deployments. Did about five deployments with them. Then COVID hits And I was given this great opportunity not to move. It's like, well, if you want, we could just transfer you, you know, from one job to another on the same post and you don't have to move. I'm like, yes. Mm-hmm. So I was with an infantry unit in Fort Campbell. And then I got assigned to this job where I've been recruiting now for just over a year. Mm-hmm. And it's actually, it's been great. I'm looking forward to getting back to, you know, back to the troops. Line. But yeah, getting back to troops and all, but this is important work. But it's going to come to an end pretty soon.
Oh, it is. Okay. So how long are the tours? Are they 2 years? Cause it's Army.
They can be, but you know, as you know, and all your Catholic spouses know, the wrinkles get thrown in when you promote like out of your job. Yep. I kind of promoted, not that I promoted out of the job that I'm in calls for an 04 or an 03, mm-hmm. but you can fill this job with an 03. There are jobs for an 04 that you can't fill with exactly. anything but an 04.
So when those jobs become vacant, they need you.
And that's exactly what happened. So yeah. I'm okay. on my way out the door this summer move, I'll be gone.
Okay. Do you know where you're going?
I have a good idea.
Very admirable thing, like to recruit priests for the military. But there is very much when you're trained as an officer, there's something about being and a priest being with your people. You know,
it's a beautiful thing. I can explain this even further. Thanks be to God, the need for priests is so great. We'll never be past the point of the need for us to minister as priests, no matter what rank we're wearing.
Yeah.
Because there's so few priests.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if you're an 04, an 05, an 06, they still need a priest to say mass, hear confessions, and that keeps you grounded with ministry and with people.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for this. So I'm speaking to you from my rectory chapel here at St. Agnes in Baltimore. And
okay.
I had to look for opportunities for ministry on this recruiting job because it's so intense. I'm gone about 3 weeks a month. I'm traveling all over the place. And the Army writes it in the orders that I do not have ministerial responsibility.
Oh.
But that's kind of poisonous for a priest to not like what am I just not going to say mass for, you know, for 2 years? So that's obviously, good, yeah. of course, I mean, for my own spiritual well-being and my own commitments as a priest.
And like the pastoral, like yes. you're a father, you know what I mean?
Yes,
like-
yes. So it's been great that I've lived here at this parish. We've had a bit of a tradition here. I hope my replacement can live here too. I think it's very healthy. I'm not home much, but when I am home, I say the daily mass. I help out with confessions. I'm going to be home all the Holy Week. I'm going to take a whole bunch of the liturgies on Holy Week. And it's just wonderful. It's also a nice touch point to be living in. I haven't lived in a rectory in about 10 years. So
yeah.
it's nice to know like, all right, this is what I'm coming back to, you know, because the time will come. Mm-hmm. I'll be too old. I'll be too sick. We're too dead and I'm going home to my diocese and that's the end of it. So you know, when I go home for ministry, it's going to be in this setting and I look forward to it. It's going to be good.
So every time when like a new assignment comes or whatever, somebody like a quote unquote normal person has the opportunity to essentially like, okay, I'll sign these orders. Or if you say no, you got 6 months and you're out. So does the bishop make like, does Cardinal Dolan make that decision for you?
That's a great question. It's so fun to have this interview with you because you're asking, you know, the military questions.
Yeah, because I know these things. Very real. Well, so my dad was in the Navy for 35 years. So this is literally all I've ever known. Like all the acronyms, I'm like, I'm going to have to put the acronyms in the show notes because I know all of them, you know.
So basically when a man begins his ministry as a priest and a chaplain, mm-hmm. it takes a minimum of two bishops to say yes. He needs his home bishop to say yes. Then all of this preparation goes to the Archbishop for the Military Services.
Yeah.
And then he has to say yes for then your paperwork to be boarded through the Army and all the medical stuff that goes with it and security background checks, all of that. And then mm-hmm. you become a chaplain. That's a minimum of two bishops because you could get it. There's a beautiful and noble path to citizenship for foreign born priests with green cards.
Yeah. I met a priest in Fatima who did that, Father Nowak. He's he was Polish,
right?
Came over and like gained a path to citizenship through the priesthood, I think in like Wisconsin or something. And then through there, finished his path to citizenship by becoming an Army chaplain.
If a priest and any priest who's listening to this, they have a heart for God and country, as long as they have a green card. We're not in the green card business. You have to get your own green card.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a green card, we can leverage that to become, if you should you come and serve as a chaplain within a year, we expedite your citizenship.
Wow.
And it's great. It's just a wonderful, you know, service. It's a wonderful thank you to these priests that are willing to come and serve. But that would be a third bishop. I'm saying this by long way, saying that's three bishops you need.
That's crazy.
So you need the home bishop from, you know, bishop over there to bishop over here to the archbishop for the military services, all to say yes. Plus everything's got to work out medically. It's a lot. That's a minimum of four people there. That's the most you get. It's like four people to say yes to get a chaplain in uniform. Yeah. And it's difficult.
I read something like the army needs 500 priests to like adequately quote unquote serve
population. About 400, I think.
400.
Yeah. We're operating on a list of 75 because of the 90 who's of the 80 something who's retiring, who's you know, who gets sick, who gets med boarded and all that stuff. So that happens, and it's a fight. And I stand on my head to tell the other, you know, to promote our recruiting mission among the recruiting community.
Mm-hmm.
I feel very strongly to try to explain to them it's not as easy as going to get a chaplain from Liberty University. God bless them. We need Protestant chaplains, but it's their own ask. It's that one guy or gal says yes and submits themselves to the process and they become a chaplain. Yeah. But we need all of these other yeses. A minimum of three, sometimes four people to say yes to make one chaplain. And then further than that, the motivations are completely different.
Yeah.
None of your priests need a job. Not one priest needs a job.
Yeah.
They're not trying to raise a family. They don't need health care. They don't need housing. They don't need a GI Bill.
So it's really God and country is like the motivation that has to be in someone's soul. Yeah. Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. So the co-sponsorship thing, would that be somebody like, hey, I'm going to go to the archdiocese. We just came from Shreveport, Louisiana. I'm going to go to the archdiocese or the diocese of Shreveport. And I'm going to tell them, hey, I want to become a priest, but I know I want to enter the Air Force. So does the Archdiocese of the Military and the Diocese of Shreveport then co-sponsor this person in their formation?
That's pretty much how it works. I would encourage any young man thinking that way, call the Archdiocese of the Military first.
Okay.
And let the introduction come from the Archdiocese of the Military. Here's the analogy I often give. Think of this big lake with all of these priests, seminarians, and let's say men discerning a vocation, thinking about putting their toe in the water and saying, yeah, I'm going to do this. So all the priests and seminarian, they're all in this lake. They're the fish in the lake. And I show up with this fishing pole and all these bishops are looking at me going, oh, what do you think you're doing?
Those are my fish.
Those are my fish. So the analogy I give is, all right, hold on. I go upstream to then find that young man who's thinking about being a priest. He's not associated with a seminary yet. He's not associated or affiliated with a diocese yet. And now I show up with him and say, this guy wants to be in the army and he wants to be a priest. Are you interested in co-sponsoring him? Because, you know, and hopefully they are, but if they're not, he's got options. Whereas once you've made formal commitments, you know, it's then it becomes an ask rather than let me tell you what's going on here.
Yeah. And a gift really too, because you could say, hey, we want him for 10 years or whatever it is. And then you get him for the rest. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's really, I think it's also, I feel a responsibility to kind of be in the fight and help foster vocations. This job has been to foster vocations, like, you know, and you know, thanks be to God for like opportunities like your podcast and other news and broadcast media opportunities to help educate people, because then, you know, the word gets out and it's like, oh, okay, this is actually a thing. And then hopefully that fosters more vocations.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if they go in with an idea, you know, because a lot of times it's, there was a priest that we met. We went on this like marriage retreat. This priest is saying his homily. You know, obviously you're not going to like raise your hand and ask a question in the middle of a homily, but he kept talking about his son. And I was like, why does this priest have a son? You know, well, come to find out, somebody finally after mass had the guts to say like, you kept mentioning your son. Can you explain that? And so he had said that he was quite old, but he had said that when he was younger, he felt a very big call to the priesthood. But I want to say maybe it was right before the draft in Vietnam. And so there was this very American, like, our fathers served in World War II. We're going to go like pick up arms kind of thing. And so we had a high school football coach who told him like, no, you don't become a priest. You go serve your country, you know? And so he left high school withdrew his seminary application because this football coach had encouraged him to join the military. So he joins the military, meets a woman in England, where he was doing some training with the Brits, marries her, has a child. Within like 2 years, she gets like debilitatingly ill with something. And he spends the next 20 years just serving her in her sickness.
Wow.
She ends up succumbing to it. And on her deathbed, she said, "Now you need to go be a priest. Like that's what has always been in you." So he did military service and then became a priest. And, you know, praise God, he has grandkids and stuff now, which is such a crazy story to hear from a priest, but it was cool. And then looking at it from your, it's like he could have done not been a father, but he could have simultaneously done both because there is such a need. And that was something I was going to talk to you too about was laws and psychology can only change so fast, but warfare and science moves at lightning speed. And the only constant we have for many of these guys in the front lines of a lot of this stuff with this very rapidly changing technology are the chaplains there for these guys that are experiencing things that like, we don't even have the psychological advanced like knowledge to understand how like drone warfare affects people, you know, and things like that. And so I just felt like, although my podcast is not like for military women, I do have a lot of, not military women, but military spouses and stuff.
Right.
That's my life. Right. So that's what that's what I know. And, you know, we're raising a little boy right now who just like, he told me the other day, it was so sweet. We just put them in school, like for the first time ever, they've been homeschooled. So we just put them in school and I asked him, I said, "Have they asked you like, if you want to serve at mass or anything?" And he said, "Oh, I couldn't do that." And I was like, "Why not?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm not worthy." And I said, "Well, bud, people who think that they're not worthy are the people that should be up there. You know, like the people who realize like, whoa, like that standing on that altar is a privilege, you know?" But then he'll talk sometimes about maybe he wants to fly airplanes or be an engineer and do stuff like dad, you know? And so it's, as a mom, you know, you want to foster this, this sense of duty to where God is calling you and just having the option of like, he could call you to be both, you know, you could serve your country.
Absolutely.
By serving the people who are also serving the country. Like that's so needed.
And whatever that service is, whatever that call is, mm-hmm. it's Christ who makes us worthy. We're not worthy. Who's worthy? I mean, like, who's worthy of any of the blessings that we have? What woman is worthy to bring another life into this world?
Yeah.
What man is worthy to stand at the altar and offer the sacrifice? I mean, all of God's blessings are, they're not due to us. They're not owed to us. They're all a grace.
They're all a grace. Yeah, absolutely. What do you suggest? Like, even for somebody who's not a military family, you know, like let's say, would it be something as encouraging as like inviting parish priests over or seminarians over even, you know, we have had the blessing living here, meeting so many seminarians. We went to Lourdes and we're literally just, we had no plans. We were like, we're just going to go for the week, check out Lourdes and some mountains. And this random French kid stopped me because we look like we're from Norway or something and we're speaking English. And so I get to talking to him and turns out he is discerning. He said, "Why are you here?" And I said, "We just wanted to see Lourdes, you know, I'm not here for a miracle or anything." And I said, "Why are you here?" And he said, "Well, I'm here to ask my mom if I should be a priest." And so we got his information. He's French, but we met a kid in a seminary in New Orleans, you know, and so you just have this opportunity to meet all these seminarians and it's like, you could invite them into your home, you know, like how do we as lay people help foster these vocations? Not just like openness in our kids, but.
Right. I think you can make it very real by starting with your own diocese, whatever diocese you're a part of, whether you're part of the Archdiocese of the military or a local diocese, you know, a territorial diocese at home, and start on the website. And they often, most often, they have a little page of asking for prayers for their seminarians. And it makes it real. There's their picture, there's their name. And it's, I think it's, it makes it real, you know, like you're gonna pray for them. And they often publish where they have, you know, summer assignments. And you could, you know, if somebody's nearby, you know, like, oh, wow, the seminarian's over there. And you can just go and say, "Hey, I've been praying for you," mm-hmm. you know, introduce it to your kids. And I, you know, like, "Hi, you know, this is my son. We've been praying for you." And it makes it real. And it makes it real to them. It's a very important part of their formation, I think, too, because as a priest, you're going to be a public person. You're a public person, you know, like it or not. And I think a priest's strength comes from the more he embraces the fact that he's a public person, And the more available he is to people, the more generous he is with his ministry. And I think that's important. I think it's an important sign to them to show like, hey, you know, there are people that you didn't even know about that are praying for you.
Yeah.
And you know, not that you're doing it for applause or anything like that, but that we each complement each other. You know, the married vocation complements the vocation to priesthood and to consecrated life. And that's how we journey together.
Yeah.
So I think praying for local seminarians, taking opportunities to introduce your kids to the priests after masses, you know, like, and just, I think it's a great and very safe social setting for the kids to learn how to shake hands and say hello. I've seen a lot of parents do that with me. Like they stand back and then they kind of like nod at the kid and you know, the kid say, hi, Father, my name's John. I wanted to thank you for the mass today. And I see what they're doing. It's really good, healthy social interaction, you know, like
with an authority figure.
An age with screens and you know, all this stuff. People don't know how to talk to anybody. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
So true. So true.
You know, so there's a value to that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So where can two things? Where can people find you? And then where can people to contact the Archdiocese of the Military first? How can they do that?
Well, you can do that through me. You can do that through me. Cool. Very, yes. Oh, you can do all that.
So you're like the guy.
Well, I am a guy. There's because you figure each branch of service.
So each has
a guy.
A recruiting guy.
So there's a recruiter for the Air Force. Mm-hmm. There's a recruiter for the Navy. I did a recruiter for the Army. But you can contact the Archdiocese for the Military Services directly.
Mm-hmm.
Millarch.org would be the way to get to that. And then there's a vocations page. But if you want to, I can make that handshake. I can help with that handshake.
Yeah.
Just get in touch with me. And even if it's, you know, I get it, like if Navy or Air Force, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's like, I'm not going to bite. And I'll get you in touch to the appropriate recruiter.
Yeah.
I don't know why you're going to want to join the Air Force, the Navy, but that's another story. But yeah, fr.unclesam on Instagram.
fr.unclesam. Cool.
Yes.
And then
you can just contact the Archdiocese of the Military directly. And that's fine too.
Cool. Okay. Awesome. It was so great talking to you. It was very nice meeting
you. Great talking to you.
Yeah.